Magic Makers, and welcome back to the Metaphysical Apothecary. We are your hosts, Megan and Shannon. We are also known as the Scorpio Sisters, and we are here to explore the mysterious, magical, and the arcane.
So the way that we perceive luck is often that we either have good luck or bad luck. And if you have bad luck, you have no luck, which doesn't actually pan out in terms of actual energy. If you have a good apple or a bad apple, you don't have zero apples. You just have an apple that's rotten. And it's the same thing with luck. If you have zero apples, it means you need to go and get some. You need to go out into the orchard or the grocery store and choose the fruit of your choosing, the variety of apple that you like the most. And it's the same thing with luck energy. It's more common than you might think to have zero luck, to be luck free. Maybe you're coming out of a long period of some sort of stagnant or neutral state where you were recovering from an illness or an injury. Maybe you were postpartum and felt like you were floating through time, because that's a difficult time to try and use your brain and your energy because you're pouring them into other things. Maybe you were on the upswing of a depressive episode, or maybe you just haven't really ever thought about having luck before. You're not a superstitious person. And if it's not something you think about, then you're not really dipping into either bucket, either the good or the bad luck. So if you're at base zero with your luck, you have to dip into the abyss, the well of possibilities, and manifest that for yourself.
So in the last podcast on luck, Megan and I ended up focusing on the alchemy of luck, from negative and bad luck or energy, and transforming it or transmuting it into positive energy and good luck, changing your mind frame and mindset in the process. In this podcast, we're going to be exploring how you dip into the abyss, how you get apples when you have no apples.
Right.
Honestly, I get numb a lot of the time, emotionally, mentally, physically numb. And when I'm in a numb state, I'm not actually in a state of negative energy or negative emotions. And I'm not in a positive state either. So I'm sitting somewhere in the middle, more or less healing as I try to recover from whatever overstimulated me and numbed me out.
Right.
I don't know if you've noticed when you go numb, but when I go numb, I have no negative energy and emotions. I have no positive energy and no positive emotions. And thus, I'm not working with any luck energy.
Yeah. When I would feel numb would be after what I thought was a panic attack. It turns out that they're autistic meltdowns. They are very similar, but people who are not autistic can have panic attacks, whereas the autistic meltdown is a result of sensory overload. And in that state, I just don't have the energy to put to anything except going through the motions of my day. So when you're in that state, it's sometimes much easier to say, well, I'm going to give an offering to one of my deities, or I'm going to create a small abundance bowl, or I'm going to light this green candle or put this lucky talisman on a necklace, than it is to try and exert your energy into anything. And those things become magnets for the energy that you want to pull in, and they help your recovery go a little bit faster and be a little bit more beneficial, while also lending you some energy so you can get some things done that you need to do.
I normally enter that numb state after recovering from a migraine.
Yeah.
Most of the time migraines happen because I've become overstimulated, whether it's light, color, sound, smell.
Yep.
In the state of migraine pain, I'm not numb yet, but I'm working towards getting numb so that I can get over the migraine. So I need to get back to a luck-free state before, and recover and heal from it before I can go back and interact with anything that's not darkness.
Uh-huh. Migraines and meltdowns have very similar psychological patterns to them.
Yeah. So when I come out of it, the easiest workings that are for me to light a candle, work with crystals, crystal grids, or essential oils. So I start engaging with little things. And one of those little things is offer up the scent of lemon to Kali Ma, just to help me get through this state of numbness. Or I'm going to light this candle to help me work with this numb state in order to get back up to a place where I can do more.
Absolutely. So you can also do these workings, these manifestations, these spells, when you are in a state of either low luck or bad luck. You don't have to wait till you have no luck or when you're neutral. We're just saying low energy spells are really good for drawing that energy in, help you to come back to a more present state of mind, and also to draw in and manifest the abundance that you need and deserve after an event like that.
Yeah.
So much spell work exists to increase your luck, increase your abundance, increase your good fortune, to banish negativity, self-care, wellness, and manifestation.
Mm-hmm. These are spells that offer empowerment to the individual.
Yes. So you're empowering yourself to see things more clearly or to accept opportunities when they come down the line, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
You can also pull more abundance your way by making the energy around you a bit more magnetic.
Yeah.
A really good way to do that is to create an abundance bowl, also known as a money bowl.
Mm-hmm.
On the blog, there's an article that I wrote about creating my own money bowl that we have in an altar in the Good Fortune Bagua in our apartment that Shannon helped me find with some very quickly and hastily drawn floor plans.
They are not to scale.
They're not to scale, but they were extremely helpful. But my process for making that was extremely ritualized. There's a lot of layers that went into it. I chose to use rice as my base because rice has been a symbol of abundance and prosperity for thousands of years. There's this adorable little candle well in the middle where I can replace the candle, and cinnamon sticks, very elaborate. You don't have to do that if you don't feel it's right for you.
Mm-hmm.
When I practice magic, I'm often very extra because the visual stimulation really helps get me into the mindset.
That's part of the reason for tools in the first place. It's to help get your mind in the right place in order to manifest what you want to happen, to visualize and manifest.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to make your own money or abundance bowl, there are really easy ways to do it. My first one that I made, I don't think I bought more than like one thing for it that I didn't already have, was some little aesthetic pebbles that I decorated with gold leaf marker to make them look like they were stones that had gold embedded in them. But I just went around my home, and anything that felt luxe to me or was associated with abundance and monetary prosperity for me, I added to the bowl. I happened to have some cinnamon sticks on hand, bay leaves in our cupboard. I had a bunch of vase fill that was this really beautiful jade green color. It's just glass vase fill, but it looks like these gorgeous jade green stones, and jade is highly valued as something that's really precious. So I added some of that. I created little paper fake money. It doesn't look like any earth money. I ended up decorating it with designs that were completely my own to make it look like it was something out of a fantasy world, because again, that's my aesthetic. So it was like fantasy money, because this was like my fantasy was having more financial freedom in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the probably weirdest things I added to my money bowl was rock candy on sticks, those coffee stirrers with the sugar crystals on the end, because sugar is amazing for sweetening spell work. It helps accelerate the spell work, and it helps sweeten the pot. And also sugar, honey, and sweet things, dessert, luxurious items like that are seen as a sign of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to create your own money bowl, you can go the complicated route. Everything that I used is on the blog in the article that I mentioned, but you can also just fill a bowl with rice and your spare change. You can put a bowl of salt with a candle in the center and some pretty crystals arranged around it in an auspicious place and move on with your life. You can just have a jar full of your spare change and other coins that you shake when you come in the door. It doesn't have to be complicated.
It just has to feel right to you.
Mm-hmm. What was your money bowl?
Hold on, let me get up and see. I do these things, and then I purposely put them in places where I can still see them, but I don't necessarily have to remember what's actually in them. Its base is rice from a Native American company from, I think it was Minnesota. So it's wild black rice. One, wild. Two, it's black. And three, it supported Native American doing business and actually being able to thrive in the world that's attempted to make them marginalized in more ways than one.
Yep.
I value rice, and I value Native American wisdom and knowledge and in general culture. So grab that. I have basil buds that are in here because I grew my own basil plants for quite a while. And if you want your basil to last longer through the season, you're supposed to pinch off the buds, but I never really threw them away. I just allowed them to dry. So I have like a whole bunch of basil buds, and basil, the leaf, can be put into your wallet to attract more wealth. So I associate basil and basil buds with attracting wealth and abundance in general. I have grapevine twigs because grapes have always been associated with abundance and wealth. I have amber pieces. I have a few other herbs in here. And then I also have scrolls that I also decorated with all my own symbols, but they were originally checks that obviously no one ever uses anymore. So I'm not going to waste it. And I know what it represents to me. I've written out amounts that I would appreciate receiving. Some of them do have very large amounts, but most $100, or you're going to get $50, or you're going to have $20, because sometimes all you really need or really want is to find a 20.
Yeah.
And I allow what needs to come to me. I also have it in a jack-o'-lantern bowl because I happen to love Halloween. I don't know if anyone has discovered that about me.
No one knows that about you.
Well, full disclosure, I absolutely love Halloween. So the bowl is actually a bowl that I got for Halloween decoration, but I wasn't using all year round. And when my living situation shifted and changed, I realized that I was probably not going to put it out for Halloween decoration anymore anyway. So I used that jack-o'-lantern bowl because I can always appreciate more Halloween in my life.
Right.
I love it that much. I will always appreciate more Halloween in my life.
So you can see that we both had a very different approach to creating our money bowls. But they're both super effective because they're right for us. So when you're creating your own money bowl, I would suggest that you wander around your living space and look and see what you have that feels good to you. Again, you don't have to use rice as a base. You can use salt. If you do use salt, maybe don't put coins in there per se, because they will oxidize over time. Some people do drip wax all over their money bowls. It's also, I love looking at mine. I love the way it looks when it's lit up, because it just looks like a bowl of treasure to me. Mm-hmm. And I love visually luxurious things. So something else that you can do if you want something more specific to come into your life are manifestation candles. This can be as simple or as elaborate as you want it to be. Some people buy triple blessed manifestation candles that have been rolled in rose petals, and the witch they're buying them from has dedicated it to Hermes. You can do that. You can also get your own tapers from the dollar store and carve them with your goal. Mm-hmm. Just using the tip of an old pen that doesn't work anymore or a stylus, sit it in a candle holder and burn it. Very simple.
Mm-hmm.
You can dress them with oils. If you do that, please make sure that you don't touch the wick with the oil, because that's a fire hazard. Please, if you have one that has rose petals or some other flammable substance on the outside, put it in a candle holder that's on top of a fireproof plate, because more than likely those things are going to catch fire at some point, and it looks really cool when it's happening and it can feel really good, but that is going to shift quickly if your home catches on fire.
I would even say, if you want to be extra careful, take the fireproof plate and put it on your stove.
Yeah, or we have a fireproof tile that we had under our fake fireplace, and it's 24 by 24. So if your ritual space needs to be more private than your stove, that would be a good option.
Mm-hmm.
So manifestation candles, obviously there are many different ways to do them. You can include color magic. You can include aromatherapy magic. You can include things sprinkled around the candle, salt, herbs, crystals. You can create a mandala and light the manifestation candle to activate it. You can burn a strip of paper in the candle. And again, please use fire safety when you do that and manifest your desire that way. And maybe your manifestation desire is something that's not crazy specific. It's something small, like I want to shift my mindset and I'm going to use this manifestation candle to meditate on that and meditate on noticing the glimmers and noticing the good things and seeing where I can help.
Mm.
Maybe you feel like every time you try to shift your mindset or every time you try to change your life, you run into obstacles constantly.
Yeah.
Obstacle busting spells. These are fun because they usually involve breaking stuff.
Yes.
At the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair, I encountered one of the simplest, most effective obstacle busting spells ever. There was this booth where you could go and pay to throw glass and ceramic objects at a target in the back of the shed. So it was this wooden shed, it was enclosed, and you had to wear goggles. So all of the breaking stuff was just spraying inside the shed. It was very safe. But you could just whip breakable stuff at the back of this target, and it was so cathartic. And you could write things in Sharpie on the stuff before you broke it too. So if you were having trouble with something, you could just whip it out of your life, basically, and shatter it into a million pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You can do the same thing in your own life. I have absolutely 100% written problems, or even people's names if they're acting up, on paper, torn that paper up with great prejudice, and flushed it down the toilet.
Yeah.
If it's a real bad problem, wait till you have to go to the bathroom and do this. I'll let your imagination take it from there. You can do something similar to what I just described, either in a safe place in your home where you go outside on your porch or somewhere else where it's not going to cause a problem, and break a bunch of plates, find a bunch of plates that you don't need anymore or what have you, and just break a bunch of plates, just smash them into the ground. You'll feel better afterwards, I promise.
And if you don't have the plates to spare, I would suggest going and buying one of those bags of ice that you can get at the grocery store that's all clumped together. The worst one you could ever purchase for like actually wanting to use the ice, grab the most clumped up bag of ice, bring that home, go out into the backyard or wherever you can break things, designate the floor as the real world, and you tossing that thing down and breaking that out as your willpower, your force, and your ability to break the obstacle in front of you while you're labeling the bag as the obstacle. And then don't use the ice. Flush that down, put it in the sink, let that be evaporated, just leave that stuff scattered in the backyard, because it's water, it will eventually go back down to the earth, and the earth will absorb it and use it as nutrients, because earth does that.
Take a baseball bat to it. Just go ham on this bag of ice.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you can afford it, rage room. Take a Sharpie in with you. Write whatever it is that you need to get rid of in your life on the pieces in there, or on a wall, or whatever it is. Some of them are set up where it's a closed building where they let you go in and do some of the demolition and just go hog wild. And some of them are actually set up where it looks like this really elegant room, but it's actually super cheaply decorated, and they let you just destroy this elegant looking space.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, just write what you need to get rid of, and then go hog wild.
Yeah.
Of course, you can do much gentler obstacle busting spells.
Not as fun.
They're not as fun, but some people aren't as violent as we are. You can pick from your pantheon, or you can choose a character to embody their energy. Molly Roberts likes to use Tank Girl, as a comic book character, as an obstacle buster. Juggernaut from Marvel Comics be a really good obstacle buster, as would any Klingon character. Is gonna just rip right through your obstacles. So you can call on that energy with a candle or with some sort of artistic representation or something of that nature. Tear a piece of paper, just light the candle, and visualize the character taking care of the issue. Deities, there are many obstacle busting deities out there. Ganesh is a good one. If you feel comfortable working with Hindu deities, Thor and Thor's hammer.
Sometimes he is the obstacle.
Sometimes he is. But also, there might be entities out there willing to devour things for you, too. Leviathan, he's part of the infernal set, but he likes to consume things. Feed those to him. A shocking one that not a lot of people would think of, if you're comfortable working with Christian deities, Jesus.
That is very true.
Jesus is good at obstacle busting. Do you remember his whip in the temple?
Mm-hmm.
He's good at this. So those are just some examples. When it comes to obstacle busting, if you're calling on certain entities, please be careful. For instance, Cthulhu may be an egregore, but Cthulhu's a very powerful egregore at this point in our lives. So be careful which aspect of Cthulhu you're calling on, and make sure that you dismiss him or say goodbye to him or push him back into his place after you're finished working with him, because as I love to say, cannot unring a bell.
Nope. Also, if he chooses not to be summoned by that bell, just leave him alone.
He's sleeping. You don't want to wake him up.
Mm-mm.
So, other spell work you can do to help this luck mindset manifest is spell work on your eyes. You can enchant your glasses, you can enchant your contact lenses, your sunglasses. You can literally buy rose-colored sunglasses and enchant them.
Mm-hmm.
You can also maybe do a little bit of enchantment on some Visine drops. Please never put anything in your eyes that is not meant to be there. Do not put essential oils in your eye.
No, that's not a good idea.
But your eye makeup, if you have a dark circle treatment, all of those things can be enchanted. You can also take a picture of your own eyes and draw symbols on them that way. If you really want a hands-on way to do this, it's not just energy work.
Mm-hmm.
You can also look into a mirror and do the same thing. And listen to songs like I Can See Clearly Now, The Rain Is Gone, or Doctor My Eyes. Possibly one of the most fun ways to bring more luck into your life, magically speaking, is by creating talismans and amulets for good luck. Mm-hmm. This is super fun, and you can get wild and crazy with it. People have these all the time anyway. It doesn't have to be a rabbit's foot or a four-leaf clover. I wore a cross necklace for years and years when I was still a Christian. Prior to that, I think I still have my gold necklace that my parents got me that had an adorable little sleeping cat charm on it. And I wore that every day because it felt good for me to wear it. Rings, so any kind of jewelry that you wear all the time, even like a wedding ring. If you have a happy marriage, that's a great good luck charm. That is a great talisman to have. You don't necessarily need to do anything to that except look at your wedding ring a couple of times more a day and go, I am so lucky to have this amazing person in my life.
As a person who absolutely loves rings and jewelry, caveat here, every now and then you're going to have to take your rings off because if you put too much energy into them, they'll run away from you.
Yes.
So if you're using your rings as your talisman and you don't have them bound to you, make sure you do actually let them have a period of rest and you're using a different talisman the days you're not wearing them.
Yeah. You can put them in some jewelry cleaner, or if it's safe to do so, run them under cold water and just let them air dry, but give them a little bit of a cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
Same with anything else that you're using as a talisman all the time. People have had crystals break or mugs shatter, things like that, because there's too much energy in them.
Yeah.
If your crystals break, that's okay. You just have more crystals now, but you maybe need to adopt a practice of regularly cleansing the ones that are still intact.
Yeah, because they're doing their job.
Uh-huh.
And when you just happen to not realize they're doing their job until they do shatter, and you have to be thankful, grateful that they've done their job up to this point, and then find ways to support them as they do their job.
Exactly. So obviously you can go to the ordinary things for this. You can do the rabbit's foot. I don't love that for personal reasons. Not a fan of carrying around pieces of animals with me.
I also have a logical disconnect. He is the luck that rabbit if it lost its foot.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure of the luck it's providing.
Exactly. I also tend to avoid anything that's delicate as a lucky charm because then it makes me nervous that I'm going to lose it or destroy it accidentally. Feathers or four-leaf clovers. Like if you have a four-leaf clover that you want to use, maybe put it in some resin jewelry or something like that, that it's protected.
Yeah. Thing to find a four-leaf clover. And it's supposed to be that momentarily happy moment of, oh, I found one. And now you have a bunch of luck, but it's not necessarily something that's supposed to bring you luck for the rest of your life.
Right.
So making it into a piece of resin, you yourself are actually taking active changes to the original piece of luck to ensure its longevity.
Right. That's a piece of magic in and of itself, is you're enabling that thing that was supposed to be finite to be infinitely attracting the luck to it and thus to you.
Yes.
But obviously, coins, people carry around lucky pennies, any coins that have special meaning to you. But you can also do things like make your own jewelry. Making your own jewelry is a wonderful way to create a charm or an amulet.
Mm-hmm.
And people do a lot of this. Prayer beads are actually really good for this because few people are going to super question like somebody's prayer beads. They don't really want to talk about religion most of the time. But they have a really, really long history of being very powerful as both protective and prosperity attracting mm-hmm. charm. Rosaries have a long history. Mala beads have a long history. And modern pagans are making prayer bead jewelry dedicated to many different deities. You can meditate with your deity, or you can just make one that's just dedicated to luck. Those magnetic hematite bead necklaces were really popular for a while, and hematite's really good at attracting luck. It's magnetic. So anything that you do as a hobby can be incorporated into your spellcraft and be turned into something that attracts luck, abundance, comfort, etc. Mm-hmm. So if you are into fiber art at all, sewing, knitting, crocheting, weaving, macrame, tying knot, anything that has to do with tying knots or binding things up, create a certain atmosphere, sit and visualize and meditate and use it as a meditative tool.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be infusing that positive, abundant energy into whatever it is that you're making. You can also dive into the world of astrology to improve your luck.
So with astrology, if you really want to get into the fun stuff, like you're just looking to putzy around and you don't need to bring drastic change into your life immediately, but you'd like to know where your luck resides. If you look at your natal chart, the chart of the moment of your birth, look for the planet Jupiter. Jupiter is the luck bringer. He's a planet of great abundance, the great benefic. He attracts fortune. He expands and increases things. That can be not always so positive. Sometimes what he increases is not what you wanted to increase. But for the most part, he brings luck to that area of your life. So for instance, my Jupiter happens to be actually sitting on my ascended line. So I have a very optimistic point of view. And I happen to be lucky in that when I fall into very negative places in my mind and my emotions and my heart, I literally can't reside there for very long. And that's part of my Jupiter sitting on that particular ascended. Who I identify as is a person who is not necessarily weighed down by all the negative things that manifest in life in general. I see them, I process them, and I try to find reactions, responses, or solutions if I can. And if I can't, I try to find helpers.
Uh-huh.
If I don't take this holistic, healthy approach, Jupiter's luck will still be there. It'll be very optimistic, but there'll be a sense of denial about things that will come out, even to myself. And because I'm stalling the process, I'm stalling how to look at the negative stuff because I just don't have the time, the energy, or the ability to process right now. So there might be a sense of like, I think she's a little delulu. About this one particular thing. It's mainly because I haven't sat down to process what that one negative thing is or the series of negative things. So where he is in my chart aligns with Megan said it. I'm able to see these horrible things that are happening in this world. I acknowledge them. I know they're horrible. They're horrid. I want to do something about it. And when I can, I do. But I'm also able to look at what good is this horrible thing going to hopefully bring in with it. I really do hope we bring in a more conscious understanding in our society that these horrible things should no longer happen. And so it doesn't. Or when I acknowledge the brokenness of our system and how it got so broken, mm-hmm. I also acknowledge the players who broke it had some good effects that made us who we are today.
Right. So I have Jupiter in Aquarius and it's in the first house.
So first house is your self of identity. So this is how you processing, again, more or less the same way. You're not super pessimistic.
No.
And when you have a good idea or a good vibe, a good energy, he expands that good idea, good of energy. And in Aquarius, it's the sign of science, connecting to other people, humanitarian efforts. It's a sign of friendships, tribes, long-term goals as well, like wishes and stuff like that, aspirations. So you happen to have luck in identifying yourself or presenting yourself to those things, and it brings more luck to that part of yourself.
That's why, despite being autistic with absolutely zero social skills, and I'm not being bigoted against myself, I have no social skills. Despite that, I have a pretty close-knit tribe, and I'm fairly good at making at least surface connections with others.
Mm-hmm.
So that would make sense. It also makes sense that I have a constant and very deep longing for community. When we were in college, that was the best social setup that probably could have existed for me, because we were in dorms where you were just constantly walking around, running into people. There were opportunities for spontaneous interaction, which I need, because otherwise I won't interact with people. But also long-term goals, my life has gotten progressively better as I've gotten older and further into my career and more self-actualized and cycle breaking, etc. So feels very true.
The thing is with Jupiter in your natal chart, you might not even know or recognize, be aware, consciously aware of the luck he's bringing you to that particular area of your life until it's pointed out to you. So you can point it out to yourself. Like I said, you go to your chart and you look for Jupiter and find out what sign and what house he happens to be residing in. And you got the arena of your life that he's manifesting that life in and the flavor. The sign is the flavor.
Yep.
Or you can also look at where he happens to be right now in the sky. You can choose to use Vedic astrology. You can choose to use Western astrology. It's up to you. For the most part, he's even more benefic in Vedic astrology.
Uh-huh.
So you go look where he is right now in the chosen astrological chart you want to use and system. And he currently, at the time of this recording, is in Taurus. So he's bringing abundance and luck and fortune to values, actually ethical values, to how we interact with agricultural and domesticated animals, how we interact with the earth in and of itself.
Right.
So you start to see and recognize that in your life, you might actually be getting luckier with those things because he happens to be in the flavor of Taurus. Where that flavor happens to end up manifesting in your life will depend on what house Taurus is in for you. He's in my second house right now. So I have definitely seen a lucky break quite a few times when it comes to financial value.
Right. So for me, Taurus is in my fourth house with the North Node.
Mm-hmm. So fourth house is home.
Which explains why I don't like leaving the house.
Yeah. You also, in Taurus, don't have as many problems with things breaking down in the house, in the apartment.
No. There are light bulbs in this apartment, knock on wood, that I feel like should have burned out by now and haven't. Again, knocking on wood. But we don't have a lot of trouble here.
Yeah, there with the North Node. I associate the North Node with like the claw machine at arcade games.
Okay.
So it's what you're reaching into the pot to pull out in order to have more tools in your bag of holding, which is the South Node.
Okay.
What he's doing is expanding and bringing luck to your ability to reach into that particular sign's talents and that particular house's treasures, if you will, treasure trait, and allowing you to pull it out easier without having to learn as much know-how on how to use it or how to acquire it.
That makes sense.
Jupiter brings luck to you. He doesn't determine the size, but he will continuously expand it.
Right. Shin is our resident astrology guru. I have a nominal knowledge of astrology, but she is the expert, which is why I am asking her about these things. I have a very surface knowledge. I don't work with the astrological a lot, but this has been like decades long study for her. So,
and continuous study. Yeah, astrology can be a really fun way to start engaging with and seeing where your luck happens to reside based off of when you were born and seeing where the luck actually happens in your life. So again, Jupiter's flavor is your sign and where it's happening in your life is what house it is in. I find it entertaining, and know thyself is really one of my go-to mottos. So it's part of knowing thyself. Luck in general is very serendipitous, and just how serendipitous and how easily accessible it is going to be up to you and how you interact with things. But just being able to correlate things to your astrology and be like, oh, that's interesting. Let me see if I can experiment with this is a great way to know yourself and know, you know, your limits and stuff like that.
Exactly. So that's a piece of it as well, is understanding yourself, not taking yourself too seriously, doing that earth work, and then anything else you do magic wise will just amplify that.
Hopefully this podcast with the magic bell work and workings we talk about will help either make it easier to find ways to manifest that luck or to understand when you might be in that situation of luck freeness.
It's really difficult to attract luck if you're sitting there thinking to yourself, I'm unlucky. If you think of yourself as fundamentally unlucky, nothing's going to really help you. Start to see yourself as someone who can take care of your own problems.
You could do it subconsciously. People who are overly superstitious or believe everything is bad luck often manifest further bad luck for themselves. Same way with good luck. So if you're attempting to manifest luck, it's important to understand how that energy works so that you're building your spells and your workings properly.
That's all we have on the topic for today. Thank you so much for listening in, and we hope you'll join us again next time. In the meantime, you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest, and go to our blog for some more witchy wisdom, as well as check out some of our original art on Society 6 for sacred decor and more. Thank you again for joining us, and go make some magic and live your best life. Bye.
Bye, everyone.